Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. In podcast 713, kind of a podcast consciousness or a building block, as I kind of ease into covering the midterm elections in America in 2018. That's coming up November 6th, 2018, and we're going to be doing a few podcasts here and there about it. So we're going to talk about populism and tribalism in podcast 713 and how it relates to the American political situation. Well, as I speak in podcast time, we are under a winter storm watch. So if you live in Minneapolis and St. Paul this weekend, you're probably going to see some snow. I don't know how serious it's going to be. You know, they're telling us that it could be anywhere from between an inch and 12 inches or 20 inches. The northern part of the metro is going to get hammered, supposedly. We'll just have to wait and see because you know how these things go. But I'm going to actually mention something that has to do with summer, because this is all going to end. As I've been saying, you know, eventually the glacier will recede, and we feel like, many of us, we're going to go directly from spring into summer. And of course, once it's over 70, people in Minnesota are going to be sweltering, and they're going to want to turn on their AC, and it may or may not work. And this is why I mentioned Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. Why won't it work? Well, if you haven't had it checked in a couple of years, there might be filter issues, there might be stuff in the box outside that you're unaware of, animals could have gotten in there, and it's really important that you have it checked, because when it comes to keeping these systems operating, you got to have reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating. In St. Paul, you can call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. File that away for when it gets warm, because once it's 70 degrees, they can come and check your AC. In the meantime, freezing pipes, water heaters, all kinds of problems related to winter, Ryan is still on the job. 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. For four generations, they have been in Frogtown in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, ryanplumbing.com. Ryan Plumbing, once again, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, ryanplumbing.com. And very quickly, people have been asking me, how do I get your podcast? If you have an Android device, try Stitcher.com. iTunes for iPhones and iPads and Macs. Tune in, blogtalkradio.com, Google Play. These are all places where the podcast lives. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and the cesspool that has become Twitter, as well as the fabulous Instagram. And I appreciate your donations for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcast.com. I'm just going to tell you, you know, when I had saved up a lot of money and had a lot of money, touring and going and where the story was easy because I just spent my own money. I am going to need donations the next time I hit the road. So when you hear me hit the road, I'd appreciate donations for fuel because it goes right into the tank. And thanks those of you who have. Enough about that. Well, I have a lot on my mind lately. As you know, I don't like putting up two podcasts with political content in a row for a lot of reasons. And I'll get into some of those reasons in this podcast. But I realized tonight that we are easing into the midterm election coverage for 2018 on the Bob Davis Podcasts, the sort of flagship podcast for that. The opening podcast was the Senate race coverage. And, you know, I debated in this podcast whether I wanted to really do some preparation or whether I just wanted to talk about stuff off the top of my head, which I often call podcast consciousness, or I call that a consolidation podcast, where there's so many storylines, you know, and loose ends that I just feel like I have to talk about it. But I'm not doing that. I know a lot of people like it when I do that. There's just too much in my head, and the podcast would be an hour and a half long, and I hate that. So the genesis of this idea for this podcast came the other night when I was having a conversation, and I realized that we were talking about completely different things, major political stories that everyone was reacting to that were literally a week old and were virtually gone. We were talking about different things now in the present time frame than we were talking about the week before that seemed to be so important a week before. So I went back into my computer and looked at the history and just looked at some of the stories I had pulled. And this is just from about a week ago. So do any of these stories ring a bell to you? Trump, these are headlines. Trump is right about the Washington Post's slash Amazon thing. The migrant caravan and Trump. That was a huge series of stories. The Sinclair broadcasting video. And then headlines like Dan Rather has scathing words for Sinclair. Can Trump withdraw the U.S. from NAFTA? And here's a headline you could probably run every week. 77% of Americans say major news outlets report fake news. Cambridge Analytica. We've completely forgotten about Cambridge Analytica. And then another one, no more DACA deal, Trump. Completely forgotten about in the rush of stories that have literally come out in the last few days. Now we're in the middle of a firestorm with the former FBI director who wrote a book calling the president a mafia don. The president is livid, supposedly, about all this crazy thing with his lawyer and Stormy Daniels and money, and about to fire Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, probably because he won't fire Mueller, whose investigation, with all due respect, has yet to bear any real fruit when it comes to the reason for the investigation itself, which was this idea that there is a Russian-Trump-Putin coalition of some sort in which, you know, resulting in the Trump, you know, becoming the president. You know, Trump was working with the Russians to, quote-unquote, rig the election. This has been going on now for more than a year, and they have, as far as I can tell, failed really to come up with anything. And so now we're off on a fishing expedition to find out about Stormy Daniels, which I'm not picking sides. I'm just saying this is the difference in literally a week of what we're talking about. And the stories that I mentioned before, where I asked you if you remembered those stories, they all came with enormous amounts of opinion related to tons of stories. If you do searches for them, providing detail, minute detail on those stories. And then, of course, now a week later, we're in a completely different environment. And all of these are really what they call one day and half week stories. This is the kind of story that you got to get it up because it's going to have one day of magnetic power in terms of drawing people to a website or getting people to call or getting viewers. Half week, a little bit better, 2 or 3 days, but it's the same thing. And with these one-day stories, it's just you end up, quote-unquote, skiing the fall line. And these are all talk radio terms in the sense that we developed on our show, which is basically there's all this stuff going on. You just, like when you're skiing, you know, you're taught when you first start skiing, you don't ski all the way up to one side and all the way down to the other. You kind of just ride the fall line all the way down. That's the environment that we're in, and there is no time for what might pass for factual reporting. There is only time for commentators, television and radio personalities, and even writers to fire on a topic and move on to the next. So it's what Pat Buchanan thinks of this, or it's what this one thinks of that, or what Laura Ingraham thinks of this, or what Bernie Sanders thinks of that. You fire on a topic and you move on to the next topic. And in the midst of all this, the biggest gun in the arsenal, so to speak, is Trump's Twitter account. Not only does it fuel a steady stream of speculation, but recharges the news cycle with all of its details every 24 hours or whenever the president decides that's what's necessary. And reporting comes down to airing people's opinions. I don't think people realize that on Fox News and CNN in particular, and MSNBC, they have basically adopted the talk radio format that was popular in the late 90s and early 2000s, which is you have a host or two, and they say something, and they get reaction, and they'll have guests on, and there's not really a newsroom. There's not really any kind of reporting, and yet the brand, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, suggest news. But they are simply studios where people sit, and they sit in front of green screens, which have the set behind them, and then people come on the green screens, you know, in the studio. You can't see it, but on television you can see point A at point B, put on a split screen to argue about this, that, or the other thing. And you're not really getting any real information. You're just listening to an argument. And so then reporting in this environment comes down to people's opinions. It comes down to commentary. It comes down to reaction to commentary at very high velocities because stories don't have much of a half-life. So you got to get in, you got to make your bones on that story and move on to the next thing. So that was the impetus behind the Senate Race podcast, which is partially an answer to the opinionating from Washington and New York that there is a Democratic wave building, which, by the way, I'm not saying there isn't, but I'm saying that there isn't much evidence that there is, particularly when you look at these races that I did in that podcast, the Senate Race podcast, I think podcast 712, of the most, the toss-up Senate races. The reality is that not only is this a fact of modern media in America and really a disservice of the American people, in other words, we, the people, are being deeply ill-served by biased sources, especially established sources like the big newspapers in New York City and Washington, D.C., which really are websites because no one buys the newspapers anymore, and also the old line broadcast networks. But we're also deeply confused and ill-served by the cable news channels and the so-called new media, which includes websites that pretend to be news sources like Breitbart and Huffington Post and Medium. Yes, they are opinion sources, most of the time propaganda, and that's fine. It's a free country. They're trying to persuade you to accept a certain point of view, and then all the others. And actually, I would put RT, which is Russia Today, which is Russian state propaganda, in the same mix. And then we get to social media and its problems. YouTube, which seems to either be telling us the world is ending and Jesus is going to return at the end of April this time, I think it's April 23rd, or an energetic wave of energy is about to hit the flat earth, which will usher in a new age paradise, or don't believe any of that because the Illuminati is pushing the new age agenda because they're all Satanists and so forth and so on. So you have to be a sleuth to try to figure out what the actual schedule of facts are surrounding a story, down to the fact that people are actually debating whether the earth is flat or whether Taylor Swift is an MK Ultra mind control sex slave. And this is not meant to be a rant about media because that would be simply too easy. This is actually deeper. A companion piece to the real election coverage that I will do, and that's where we talk about granular political science, talking about what the polls say, what the averages say, what individual races are, is going to the ground in some of those cases in mobile podcast command, and always starting with facts and actual poll data rather than what opinions are and what these polls supposedly say, quote unquote, will happen, because that's not what they are. They are rear view mirrors most of the time, and they once you average them, then you can begin to get an idea. And in a toss-up race, they're going to be pretty much even Steven. So making predictions about a wave, whether it's Republican or Democrat, making predictions about this happening or that happening, you know, you have to be very careful with that. And the Senate podcast, podcast 712, is the first of those kinds of podcasts. The next one I will do is actually look at the congressional races. That's going to be probably two podcasts because there are so many. And the other reason to do these is because the building storyline is simply that Trump is disintegrating, his administration is falling apart, it's only a matter of time. YouTube actually has videos, which for some reason their concern about offending parts of the community hasn't seemed to have forced them to take down yet. Videos that say that the president will be assassinated, impeached, he'll die in office, has terrible astrological aspects, dark days are coming, keeping in mind that just prior to the election in 2016, there were many of the same people talking about how Trump's astrological aspects made him a perfect leader for the future and that he was going to win and so on. So we are getting people that are just taking shots in the dark. You're not getting an academic or granular or even journalistic view of anything in particular. And you have to be against Trump for any number of reasons if you're in the media. If you're a musical artist or if you're a journalist, you have to believe that Trump is a fascist. He's crazy. He's a narcissist. The latest, the Mafia Don story, a Manchurian candidate for president who was put there by the Russians. And yet, despite all this, he's roughly about as popular as Obama was for most of his presidency and a tad more popular than Bush at this point, and probably worse than some other presidents, and certainly worse than those presidents at various times during their presidency. And of course, since we can't predict the future, we can't possibly know what you know, what the future holds for Donald Trump. And this isn't a defense of the president, because I don't do that. He can defend himself. He has a giant, you know, stick called the Twitter feed. But this is simply explaining how the storylines are laid out. And because, of course, someone who is president with this many problems can't possibly continue. That's the storyline that we're working with. And so you can imagine the surprise if something else happens. And you can imagine the backlash because of the surprise if something else happens, because the media outlets are telling people constantly that something is going to happen that may or may not happen. And truthfully, they have no idea whether A, B, or C is going to happen either. Meanwhile, they're exhausting us. There are too many of these one-day stories, oftentimes perpetrated by the president to get hold of the microphone so that he can get the upper hand in an argument with, you know, a left wing in this country that has believed that the media is its birthright for far too long. And it's a way for him to get on top of the protests and reactions and opinionated and angry people and academics writing books about how our politics is crumbling and everything else. And all of these myths, China will overtake us, they're stealing us blind, Russia's going to take over, they're running the White House, and so forth and so on. And if it isn't that, it's one executive or Hollywood star after another who is pushed over the edge of the cliff to prosecution or, infamy because they did something to a Hollywood starlet, or they said something, or they sent a nasty email to someone, or something. And then all of that means that some new law has to be passed to stop this behavior or to stop these people because someone is offended by a product or service or person, and heads are going to roll. And where is all this taking place? It's taking place on your computer, on your handheld device, on cable TV, on social media. And when you turn it off, what do you get? Now take a breath. Because when you turn it all off, you get silence. The world is utterly silent. So two podcasts ago, including this one, I interviewed a guy named Sal DeLeo. Sal is an inspirational speaker and author, and he tells this great story about growing up in an orphanage. And he has a book called Did I Ever Thank You, Sister? It's the kind of story that you just don't hear these days because it shows the sacrifice of the nuns in a Catholic orphanage where the state of Illinois sent Sal and his brother and sisters to when they were 6 and 8. And you'll hear more when you hear the interview in podcast 711. And if you want to hear more, check out saldeleo.com, S-A-L-D-I-L-E-O, saldeleo.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at the bobdavispodcast.com. You see me holding the book up and you see Sal making a speech. I'll just play a quick excerpt from that interview so you can hear the drama of this story that Sal tells.
When those nuns took us in that 1963 day, it was the worst day of my life, being separated from my mother, my other siblings. You know, we cried. It was sad. But then when I turned around and looked back on life later on, what those nuns gave us unconditionally, basically they took care of us. They gave us square meals, clean clothes, education. They taught us who God was. You know, it takes you a while to kind of put that all together. But at that reunion, when I saw and heard the lives that they had and what they had been through, we realized we got the better end of the deal.
Now, there's a banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can book Sal for speaking tours, and he does not charge for that. And it's he tells an amazing story, an amazing story of gratitude, which is so important for all of us to hear. You can call Sal, too. He gave me his cell phone number and said, tell people to call me, 612-382-3582, if you want to book him for speaking. Remember, saldeleo.com or 612-382-3582. Or click on that banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Now, we're talking populism, and populism to me is exemplified in trade protection. And in the news these days, with all the talk about trade protection and foreign manufacturing, companies are preparing to reshore their production in the United States, if nothing else, to hedge their bets. If this is you and you're considering American manufacturing, remember DepotStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at DepotStar.com, DepotStar.com. And for pilots, if you are at Sun and Fun down in Florida, visit Alpha Systems at Sun and Fun and find out how your flying experience can be made much, much safer, which should make your loved ones happy with Alpha Systems. I'll tell you more about that as we get into the summer flying season. The point of the moment of silence is that all of this is taking place in cyberspace, and not everyone is having the same experience on their device as you are or I am. Now, the political people, the people that populate Washington, D.C. and parts of New York City and some of the people in California and some of the people in your own hometown who are addicted to politics, these are people who can't leave it alone for a moment. They get a perverse joy out of, you know, every single political story. But the truth is, it's a tiny swath of the population in any country, but particularly in the U.S., and when you tune in to them, it's a cacophony of shouting and screaming and cheeky points and angry tweets and squabbles, square-ups, one-liners that aren't funny most of the time, and retorts. And when you tune that out, what do you get? Well, you get nothing more than the sound of your breath and normal life. And that's pretty cool because, especially to something that is supposed to be about political coverage, you know, it's really kind of great that I can stop and listen to my own breath and not feel that I'm missing something and really not even care if I am missing something. So why am I doing this podcast and what have I been doing? Well, I have been doing business things. I've become an LLC. I had to get business cards. I'm working on sales because if podcasting is to succeed, it has to become a business. And I'm really working on being a business guy in podcasting as well as a talent. And honestly, I'm working a lot on people's objections to social media, podcasting in particular, in terms of buying it for advertising and talking to different people doing different kinds of businesses in different parts of the metropolitan area. And I have seen a different America, and I knew this America existed because I've been traveling. And as you know, if you listen to the podcast, specifically during 2016 and 2017, when I traveled and covered the primary elections, I learned that there is much about this country that the so-called coastal elites, Hollywood and Washington and New York City, aren't seeing and don't understand. The United States is a giant country from California to New York. And there are many places from California to New York that no one ever thinks about in the coastal elite cities. The people who are doing the journalism in New York City, the people that are making the movies in Hollywood, the people trying to find that that American story and so forth. You know, it's very interesting to me that F. Scott Fitzgerald, you know, wrote his books when he did not live in New York and when he was living in St. Paul. So, you know, St. Paul and Columbus, Ohio, and, you know, Nashville, Tennessee, and, you know, Kansas City, places like that is where America is. But it isn't even in those towns. It's in the exurban and suburban areas where people are basically starting businesses, running businesses, working for the government, working for big institutions, and their lives are nothing like the lives of the quote-unquote coastal elites. And what is going on in this country, at least in the when you stick your head in the cacophony tunnel of the political the people suffering from political addictions, is that we are suffering from the use of populism as a tactic in politics. I don't think the country's fabric, social fabric, is falling apart. I don't think that people are stupid. I don't think any of that, because I've seen people in environments where we don't talk about politics, but we talk about business and we talk about cooperating with each other in business. And I have seen these people across the country, and I always thought when I drove through, you know, Great Falls, Montana, or, you know, Pittsburgh, that the people in those towns, and I'm not talking about Pittsburgh proper, but I'm sure it's true, but when you get into the suburban and exurban places, you see people living and working together at the grocery store, at the Costco, at the subway, at the gas station. And when you talk to people, you find out that they are just everyday, regular old people trying to run a business, trying to work for somebody, trying to do their job at the hospital or whatever it is they do, without any editorial judgments about people who work for the government or people that work for gas stations or people that sell insurance or whatever. And the elite are telling us that we are falling apart. But I think what's happening is politically that we are suffering from this idea, this tactic of populism, which is being shouted inside that self-contained tunnel of politics that's only really happening in social media. We have a president combined with this use of populism as a tactic in American politics, who has figured out how to fight fire with fire, because no longer is outrage and demands and threats to demonstrate and threats to, you know, force laws to be passed and destruction by public hangings, which really do resemble literal witch hunts back in the day in the 16 and 17 and 1500s, you know, and this mentality in politics and media is no longer the sole province of people who consider themselves liberal. Now the president has a Twitter account big enough to throw whatever they throw at him right back at them and put them back on the defensive. If you're a coastal elite or somebody who considers yourself a so-called liberal, you don't like hearing that. But it is a fact of life now. Moreover, as I said before, there's a lot of territory in this country that is not urban and that is not the West Coast, whether it's Silicon Valley or Hollywood or the Oregon and Washington coastal hippie towns. There's a lot of people living and running businesses in places like Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, places like Hudson, Wisconsin, and Forest Lake, you know, Indiana and Lafayette and Pennsylvania, you know, in the hill country just north and south of Pittsburgh, and Virginia in small towns, and of course in Tennessee and places like Chattanooga and elsewhere. And the way that they think and act is different from what people on the, you know, either coasts think of when they live in Brooklyn or they live in, you know, West Los Angeles, and they make six figures and they live in an apartment and they hang out with people. And when you talk to them about, you know, why would a person from Hudson, Wisconsin be for Trump? You know, that's obviously, they must be crazy. And then you go there and you talk to those people and you see this incredible growth in Wisconsin, especially Western Wisconsin compared to Minnesota. And people are like, you know, what are those people like? Well, you know, you have to get down into those communities, whether they're farm communities or small farm towns that used to be really farm, purely farm towns like Amory, Wisconsin, or, you know, some of these little towns and cities north and west of Minneapolis and St. Paul that have their own, you know, Delano, Minnesota, where Congressman Tom Emmer is from, or, you know, places like that, where they don't think and they don't act like city people. And even then, they don't necessarily share their political viewpoints in Lakeville, Minnesota, let's say, or Lake City. They have to get along with each other because they have to work with each other. And so people are very reticent to share political viewpoints, and they don't necessarily yell and scream at each other. And even the neighborhood Democrat may have a lot of moderated ideas, and the neighborhood Republican and Democrat may actually find that they agree on a lot of things. Again, I'm not making a judgment, but this plays into these races that we're being told are going to go one way or another because of these tribal national stories. I don't think we are shifting into tribes. Yes, you can be a golf guy, you can be a motorcycle guy, you can be a sporty chick, you can be a yoga chick, or, you know, you can be you can display what you're into in your life, but that doesn't necessarily make you a person who's part of a tribe. And we don't necessarily want that tribal nature to be influenced. But our politics is shifting, and this is really important when thinking about 2018, because party polarities are also also shifting. And both political parties are using something called populism as a tactic and as a tool and as a unifying principle, because both of the parties have lost their moorings in terms of what principles defined them just a short time ago. Now, this has to be defined every time I use the term populism. What is populism? And this is the core of this podcast, because this is, I think, the most important thing in American politics is this use of populism and what it means, because it's causing a lot of reactions. So populism is nothing more than support for so-called ordinary people or the quality of appealing to so-called ordinary people. There was a populist political party in this country. Roughly, it began, the beginnings of it that germinated roughly 10 years after the Civil War through to about 100 years ago. Academics might suggest that these days the true populist leader might claim to represent the united will of the people. The truth is, populists on both sides say that they represent the will of the common man. Now, when you Google what is populism, you're going to see a lot of articles cited that are oriented toward Europe, where the claim is that populism is rooted mostly in right-wing nativist or nationalist movements, which are growing in popularity, the implication being that somehow these are fascist movements, which really isn't true. Brexit is not a fascist movement, and England, despite all of the predictions that they were going to fall apart, Brexit is so far working fairly well for them. You know, at this point, I'd say it's a wash. I don't think European populism is fascism. But there are fascists there who talk about populism and used populist techniques. But, and I think this is really important, populism can be seen across the political spectrum. So, you know, if you want to talk international politics in Latin America, populists are on the left. Think Hugo Chavez. In the United States, both political parties lay claim to the unified will of the American people. Both claim to have politics to assist with and help common, ordinary, everyday folks, the forgotten man, so to speak, the mythical middle class. When populism was seated in a political party 100 years ago, William Jennings Bryan represented it. People have said that Thomas Jefferson was a populist, although populism didn't exist in Jefferson's time, and so was Teddy Roosevelt. And it's funny to me how Teddy Roosevelt is viewed as this incredible conservative, but he was in many ways a populist. It was an agrarian populist political movement from 1892 to 1896, specifically, with roots from the end of the Civil War on through to the Democratic Party in the U.S. in the 1930s, because it was critical of banks and railroads, and then later the mercantile class, the merchants. The party itself was a response to low agriculture prices in the South and the Mississippi West. They wanted collective action against merchants, banks, and railroads. They wanted the government to do something about low prices and what they considered to be unfair advantage to these trusts, so to speak, out east, all centered on the railroads and so forth. They wanted reform in national politics. They wanted off the gold standard because deflation was killing their pricing power. And so they actually wanted the government to initiate and create inflation. Very interesting. Later populism as a political idea, I think, kind of mutated into labor parties in Wisconsin first, but really across the upper Midwest, where, of course, lots of farmers lived, and where farmers and particularly immigrants from Central Europe and Northern Europe were susceptible to these little guy ideas. Probably the strongest impetus in the formation of this new party was the idea that both Republican and Democratic parties were controlled by the Eastern interests. Does that sound familiar today to today's politics? It does. And today, a populist is against free trade. They want stimulus money for roads and bridges. They want to protect the little guy, the miners, and so forth. And this gets translated into political rhetoric like, I will make the middle first, which is actually what Minnesota gubernatorial candidate Republican Tim Pawlenty has been saying. And by the way, President Trump sounds a lot like the populist. Democrats, on the other hand, these days want single-payer health funded by the so-called government, higher taxes on the wealthy, regulation of Silicon Valley, Valley, intervention by the government where it pertains to gun control, recognition of social groups as protected classes, as opposed to aggrieved races 40 or 50 years ago, open borders, and of course, more social programs. Both parties have lost their basic principles. As you know, the Democrats were originally a Southern pro-slavery party, and it transmuted itself into a Northern labor and big city party. Republicans used to be for individual freedom. They were the party that won the Civil War, of course, and for the reduction of the size, scope, and power of the government, slashing budgets. But the Republicans were also the peace and prosperity and freedom and free trade party for a long time. Now the GOP appears to be spending more, adding to the debt, and is essentially the war party, basically. And you have Republican candidates like Tim Pawlenty saying things like, I'm going to increase spending for education, but I'm going to make the education department of the state, you know, accountable. I'm going to make big government work, which is something Obama said. So you can see how people might be confused about what a label is and what the brand is for either one of the parties, because the Democratic Party of the 1960s is not the Democratic Party of the 2020s. We are not seeing our politics destroyed because of tribalism. We're seeing it destroyed because to get any traction these days in politics, you have to say something ridiculous and you have to advocate for the ordinary person or you're attacked. You have to advocate for miners and steelworkers and disenfranchised classes, workers, the middle class, victims of anything, teenagers, children and women, racial minorities, sexual minorities, urbanites, suburbanites, farmers, immigrants, people of unique faiths that are not Christian. These are all brands that have to be appealed to, and you get artifacts like, you know, Paul Ryan. You know, a lot of people don't like Paul Ryan, a moderate Republican. Moderate Republicans believe essentially in marginal changes because marginal changes over time produce big results. They are generally guys in power, and they are generally the ones that say that they're the adults in the room. I don't like moderates, but not because I'm for the miners and steelworkers. I don't like moderates because I don't think they stand for anything. But here, you know, Paul Ryan resigns as Speaker, and he'll be retiring from Congress, and he is just pilloried and attacked as a loser. You know, here's a guy who's under 50, who has achieved 20 years in Congress and became the Speaker of the House, and it doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree with Paul Ryan. This is a guy who has accomplished something in his life. I would say that he is anything but a loser, considering the fact that he came from a blue-collar family. So it's very interesting what's going on, where people just attack people because they don't like them, and you don't even know why they don't like them. Basically, you have to pick your side, pick an issue, and go to town. And the louder and more nastily you can say it, the more people will hear you, because the noise is so great that this is the only way to get across. You have to cut through. And when you do, you wake up and you got 587 email messages and everybody wants to have you killed. That's the way it is in this realm. And that is what is sad about American politics. The problem is, as far as policy is concerned, populism is a massive failure. It asks that government do something and that there ought to be a law in a world where there's already too many laws. The very nature of populism is government action, which places too much power in the hands of government, which essentially you could argue that populism does lead to fascism. It certainly sought in the 1800s to intervene in the economic cycles, and perhaps the creation of the Federal Reserve can be laid at populism's door. And the Federal Reserve was clearly the reaction to the stock market crash in 1929, was clearly one of the major factors in the actual depression that resulted after that crash. I would argue also that populism resulted in the passing of the draconian trade protection law, Smoot-Hawley, which sought to protect American labor and American farmers, and arguably was the cause of the Great Depression. And the Great Depression is something that resulted in the most destructive conflict in history, problems from which we are still digging out 70 years later. On top of all this, Americans, who apparently are so susceptible to the saccharine call of populism on both ends of the political spectrum, are getting terrible information about the things that are important, the things that really do make a difference, issues that I asked voters to really think about before they voted in 2016, which some of the questions that I asked before the elections were, I said, people really need to think about what the foreign policy of the U.S. should be. How would you build it from the ground up? How would you run it and why? How do we ensure individual freedom and keep order? What economic policy do we need to be the dominant world economic power in the 21st century and to take full advantage of technological advances? Because more than likely, it'll be us and not China unless we screw up. And these are the things people need to think about in terms of their vote. But nobody really thought about it. And you go to these political meetings and you hear people bitching and moaning about Muslims or bitching and moaning about Trump, and they're not thinking about policy. So your Democrat enemy and you might actually agree on some of these key foreign policy issues if you actually spend the time to get down to the reality of what's going on, and if you actually spend the time to understand the policy at granular levels. For example, how many people read the tax bill? Now, you left your accountant to read the tax bill. And it would have taken a day to read the entire tax bill and all of the notes that went with it, even though it's 1,000 pages, you know, all told. So people didn't want to do that. They wanted someone else to do it for them, and then they bitch and moan when Congress doesn't do what they want them to do, which is why they consistently vote for the incumbent unless there is a huge problem personally with a particular incumbent politician. So given the far left populist policy ideas of the left and the actual somewhat middle ground populism of the right, I'm not endorsing it, I'm just saying it, and I don't think middle ground populism is good policy. The question is, what drives voters in 2018 and what direction will voters choose in 2018? And I do want to say something at the end of this podcast related, if you're still listening, to the Senate race thing. You know, they're all talking about a blue wave, which for Republicans is very upsetting, but I will tell you, you know, the Democrats have been out organizing to bring people into the process to be foot soldiers for these campaigns. And you go to these Republican meetings and there's nobody there. And then you start looking at the issues that are motivating the few that are left, which are, you know, usually in their 70s. And it's very depressing. So if Republicans, once again, do not get a handle on the issues, and if they don't keep rubber stamping Trump, but if they start thinking about what they're for and being able to tell people what they're for and start showing up in large enough numbers to produce a result, then they can stave off a blue wave. But just sitting there and watching Fox News, as I've said 1,000 times, and demanding somebody do something but you don't have the time isn't going to cut it. And this is why so many moderate Republicans are involved in politics, because they're the ones that go to church, they're the ones that show up, they're the ones that stuff envelopes. They're the ones that get together with their so-called Democrat neighbors to solve problems in business and in government. And they're the movers and the shakers. You know, the guys on the far end of the spectrum, you know, spewing the populist stuff on television, they're not necessarily the movers and the shakers. And again, I can't tell you what's going to happen with Donald Trump. You know, he may end up being the greatest president in 30 years. I mean, I hate to say it for people who don't like Trump. I don't think populist ideas are very effective, very effective policy. In fact, I think it's dangerous policy. But that doesn't preclude someone like Trump from becoming very popular at a certain point in this country with people who live in places like Summerfield, Ohio, and, Virginia, Minnesota, and Council Bluffs, Iowa, just to name a few, or places down in Arkansas. And I'm telling you, I've been to all these places and all through the middle part of the country over and over again in the last 3 or 4 years. And I find people are people, regardless of their political viewpoints. And they are kind, and they want to help you for the most part. And they are I'm not going to say that they're worried about their neighbors, but they like the towns that they live in, and they want to work with each other. Yeah, they may disagree on stuff, and yeah, they may be afraid of certain things, and yeah, they may not like certain things that are unfamiliar to them. But that doesn't mean that they're these horrible, tribal, feral beasts that you see in The Walking Dead. You know, as usual, so much more to say, but just not enough time to say it, and I like to keep these relatively short. But don't forget about Ryan Plumbing and Heating, especially if we get into a major storm this weekend. You can have water heater problems, you can have heating problems, and you can have still have frozen pipes. And then don't forget the AC check once it starts to warm up. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Remember, reliable service to keep all those systems operating, whether it's heating or air conditioning or plumbing. plumbing problems, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing is on the job. Check him out online at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 713. 712 was the Senate podcast. This one is about populism, I guess. But thanks for listening to Podcast 713.